Good afternoon from KZSC. I'm here with my man, Alfredo Gamma Salmarone, president-elect. Introduce yourself, please.
Yes, sir. I'm over here with the GOAT, my brother, Angelo. We've been through some rough ones, but we survived.
Right, right.
Our logic class where I met Angelo.
Yep.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alfredo Gamma Salmeron. My chosen name is Tlatoani Quetzalcoatl Xochipatli. And I say that because throughout this campaign, I was intentional about making sure people understand whose land we stand on and where we're going. I am from Iguala, Guerrero de la Independencia. It is the home of the original tribe of the Olmeca back hundreds of years. But as you can see, we're still out here thriving, surviving, and making sure that the land is protected, that the people who are part of the land and the arteries of the land are supporting one another. So that's a bit about me. I migrated back in when I was 7 years old to Los Angeles. And since then, I've just been riding the wave of life. And I got involved pretty early on in my life. I felt that coming to this country, quote unquote, illegally was the first act of resistance that I did when I was seven. I think that's where my first experience, I want to say, organizing comes in. We literally had to organize to get through that border. They train you. They tell you what to say, and I would say it's one of the most bravest actions I've taken, having been taken out by Secret Service out of presidential rallies, having gone to Standing Rock and confront armed, I want to say, colonizers who build pipelines on sacred land. So that's a bit about me. I came to UCSC and I saw it as a vacation because South Central Los Angeles, where I grew up, right now I think is going through a transformation and it's pretty violent. Just this summer I had to speak out against the bombing of my neighborhood, which was when Los Angeles Police Department detonated pounds of fireworks in a residential neighborhood. And that's the experience I had this summer. So coming to UCSC, I saw an opportunity to take a break from all that and get students together for something better and greater. And off the pandemic, I felt that we had this normal pre-pandemic where it's like people are okay with our friends being in the streets, people are okay with people at the top just getting extreme amount of wealth while people who don't have anything stay where they're at and usually fall deeper into the cracks. So running for SUA president was an opportunity to share my ideas and the ideas of our ancestors, which is we should always be striving for better and we cannot go back to normal. So that's a bit about me and looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you. Now that you've explained a bit about yourself and let people know about your experiences, how does it feel to have won the election?
Yes, it feels relieving. I want to say when we first announced the campaign, a lot of our friends were feeling a sense of isolation on campus. They were feeling a bit pressed for resources. A lot of our friends right now are going through homelessness, food insecurity. There's still, I want to say, attacks on indigenous, African American, and people of color on campus. So having ran a campaign with the issues that the communities I come from, specifically indigenous students, African-American students, having put out our platform out there. One of the first posters one of our friends did was talking about existing proudly on campus, where we are not just existing to exist. We are here to exist loudly. So having ran a campaign where we put indigenous people, African-American people, at the center of our campaign on our issues, having experienced all the terror and isolation on campus, having won with that platform feels relieving, because it seems like UCSC is ready for something else, at least the overwhelming majority of students who voted for our campaign, I think, are ready not only to come together as students, but to address the forces that are dividing and conquering. So yeah, it feels relieving, it feels exciting, and I'm excited for the next steps.
Nice, I'm excited for you. I know you worked hard knocking on doors, face-to-face communication, which is, I think, something very valuable, something that I don't see too often. So I remember you showing up at Oaks, and I was like, wow, look at this man, the enthusiasm. I appreciate that, you know, face-to-face, getting votes, meeting folks, that's how you do it. Second question, what would be your first act as president?
Yes, thank you for that question. I think a lot of my actions that are coming forward are based on those conversations that I was having while knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. I told myself, like, I have so many ideas that I'd like to implement. However, I am not here to represent anyone. I was very intentional with my rhetoric and the language that I used during a campaign. And one of it was telling people is that I don't believe in representative politics. I don't think I can represent you, which is why I told people I want to organize alongside with you. There's this person by the name of Ella Josephine Baker, who a lot of folks don't know about her, but was instrumental in advising Martin Luther King, advising all the people who were involved in the civil rights movement. And she taught me the concept of servant leadership, where you're a servant first. And through that service, you are exercising leadership, which led me to find one of her quotes, which is, strong people don't need strong leaders. And I really think that every single student here at UCSC, having talked to them, having knocked on their doors, having even cried and laughed and worked so hard in this campaign, we are strong people. You know, UCSC is such an amazing place because the majority of our students are working class students, which I think is what my first act is based on. And we already did it a couple weeks ago, or actually a week ago. I launched the party, which is the Politically Active Reignited Transformative Youngs Party, which is a network of students, faculty, and academic-wide community in solidarity and in union to bring about effective, meaningful, and time-sensitive change. So there is a SUA, which is a Student Union Assembly, which is part of the institution. And we have to understand that the institution is not going to allow us to create the change that we seek to make, because the institution is benefiting from the status quo, the current system, where students don't have a voice, don't have any decision-making power. Students only have advisory power to the administration. So the first act I took as president was launch a political organization that is autonomous and independent from the institution. So we have the freedom, we have the liberty, and we have the creativity and independence to create change both within and outside, right? Because as of right now, there's a lot of students who are not involved in the SUA, who have a bad experience with the SUA, and I don't intend to erase those experiences because that is part of the history. What I do intend to do moving forward is ensure that the party is an independent, autonomous, powerful student organization that is then using the SUA as a tool or organizing. So we don't put all of our hopes into the SUA, but into an independent, autonomous, student-led organization that has no ties to administration. Because as it is right now, a lot of students fear administration. A lot of students get intimidated. And again, it's because of decades of divide and conquer that people in power have done. So yeah, I think we already took our first action, which was, you know, making sure that people understand that there's power outside of the system, and the system is just there and not necessarily the answer to what the system has created as problems.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I think the fact that you won the election shows that people agree with you on that and are inspired by the way you address these things. In relation to your prior experience with LACCD, how would you say that's influenced you in the way you look at things now?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, I'll do my best to put that in a nutshell in the next couple of minutes. So I am a transfer student. I am 25 years old, which is important for folks to understand. I have been to a few community colleges throughout the state. Since high school, I was one of those overachieving high school students who wanted to do everything, taking AP classes to concurrent enrollment. Like, y'all, where I come from, we have no access to this. So when I saw the opportunity to do something to better myself and grow intellectually, I took them. So I started going to Los Angeles Harbor College and transferred to Santa Monica, then came up to the Bay Area. I went to Merritt College, Berkeley City College. Eventually went back to Los Angeles and finished my community college credits at the Los Angeles Community College District, which is home to 9 colleges. So think about UCSC with like 9-10 colleges, but now this is Los Angeles, and you have the 9 colleges spread throughout the county. And instead of having 20,000 students that UCSC has, the community college district has 250,000 students across LA County. As I was in my last year before transferring to a university, I saw this poster on the wall about student trustee elections coming up and, you know, signing up to be part of the board of trustees in LACCD, which right now is the largest community college district in the nation. And it's important to understand the magnitude of that district because of the power it has. Our previous governor, Jerry Brown, his first gig was in the community college district in Los Angeles. So I saw the poster, and at that time I was a STEM major. I wanted to do neuroscience. I wanted to be a brain surgeon, y'all. And I ran. At the same time, I was organizing in my community through the neighborhood council, police brutality, lack of educational resources, lack of food, people getting evicted left and right. So I thought this is a great platform to run for, to organize the community college students, who a lot of them live in their neighborhoods. They don't live on campus. And we ran. At that time, you know, the California budget had a surplus. The Los Angeles city budget had hella cannabis money that in the past cannabis was used to criminalize black and brown people in Los Angeles. So I saw it as an opportunity to use that platform in the largest community college in the district to bring awareness, to bring basic needs, to make sure that the resources that the state has, whether it's a city state or the state has, bring them back into the hands of the people. And I thought it was going to be simple. You know, you go in there, you represent people. And at that time, I thought, okay, I feel good because I represent so many people.
Right?
But as soon as I got on the board of trustees, the chancellor tried to groom me. The trustees who are politicians, these people have ran for state assembly. Some of them have ran for board of equalization. Some of them have ran for city council. So these are politicians that usually use that board as a stepping stool to the next position. Just before I got on that board, some other lady that was on that board had ran for state assembly. Then I left the board. One of my colleagues on the board, Mike Fong, is now running for state assembly. So these people use the board of trustees not only to build power, but to use student funds and to give them to their political allies to then run for higher office. So I saw all that in the Los Angeles College, the Los Angeles Community College Board of Trustees. I saw how the chancellor would invite me to galas where it's like in that gala, it's like developers and one in developers, state senators, union leaders, funders, millionaires, Congress members, chancellors on one table, you know, speaking about our institutions and how they're going to use our institutions for their own benefit. And I just saw the greed because here you have an indigenous undocumented student, poor student who all of a sudden had access to a budget that is $5 billion. And I had access to the spaces where those $5 billion are divided. And believe me, it is not students who are in those rooms. It is not janitors. It is not the people who are cleaning our rooms, that are making our dining hall food, or at community college, are working in our cafeterias. It is the people who are leading our district. It is people who are funding these politicians. So having had that experience, I learned that our education system right now has been taken over, completely over, by the people who are literally in the top 1% in this country. Back in 2020, it was one of my last meetings before the pandemic in January. We had a meeting at my home college, East LA College. And these are general board meetings where we have the seven trustees and myself as a student trustee, plus the chancellor sitting on a dais. A big table with like big fancy chairs, and there's an audience of at least 100 to 200 people depending on the meeting. And in that agenda, the chancellor had put an item to raise his own salary from $388,000 to over $500,000.
Sounds awfully familiar.
right. And what was way more familiar is that he was using this term that I think UCSC is very familiar with, COLA. Cost of living adjustment.
Right.
He was putting on the agenda that his raise of like $100,000 was due to COLA, to a cost of living adjustment.
Right.
So he was saying, I am poor with $388,000 a year in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I need a cost of living adjustment of around $150,000.
Right.
Over the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure that when it was my time to speak, I exposed not only the corruption, but sent a message to the Board of Trustees that if they were going to vote yes on that contract, they were not only going to bring shame to the students, but to the 11 million constituents in LA County who get to vote for them.
Hmm.
So after my term ended in June 2020, in November, there was an election to replace the Board of Trustees.
Right.
I got a high school football coach. I got a City of Los Angeles neighborhood empowerment worker.
Nice.
I got a homelessness service provider and a former community college student who grew up in the projects, who is now leading one of the Freedom Schools to run. So we had four people who were from the community make a challenge to the Board of Trustees in Los Angeles in the election. The Los Angeles Times local news covered our campaign, and we were only able to fundraise like $2,000.
Right.
When the incumbents had to spend $4 million
Wow.
to keep students off the Board of Trustees. And that just, I feel like, prepared me for the level of greed that I'm going to face here at UCSC. And the budgets are not different. You know, at UCSC, we have about 936 million operating budget.
Right.
Back in the day, I oversaw $1 billion budget. Wow. With like $4 billion in bond money, construction money. So I am familiar with the institution.
Right.
I am familiar with how chancellors also work to divide and conquer. One experience that is fresh in my mind about divide and conquer is one time we were having a general board meeting at Trade Tech College, one of our biggest colleges. Right. And again, these are meetings where you have hundreds of people in the audience. I usually get there late to the meetings because the first 20, 30 minutes is like Pledge of Allegiance, politicians scratching each other's backs, just, right, you know, doing political stuff that, to me, I did not have the stomach for.
Right.
Because
no time for that.
They did that, yeah, to distract the community from the millions they were about to steal.
Right.
Through illegal means, interestingly, yeah, enough. So at that time, the chancellor or the board of trustees withheld the meeting. So for me to get there in time for the Pledge of Allegiance, and they had a student veteran come and lead the Pledge of Allegiance. And in practice, with my beliefs, I did not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. And a few days later, I host a meeting where all the student body presidents from throughout the district come together and come up with ideas and solutions for district-wide problems. The student veteran that they asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance at our general board meeting came to my committee meeting to start a petition.
Wow.
To remove the student trustee from his position because I wouldn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Wow.
Right?
Right.
And I saw, you know, and I saw what was going on. It was the chancellor, the board president, and the trustees who I was exposing, because in that meeting, we were going to talk about the Metro board passes for students that the Board of Trustees had given hundreds of thousands of dollars to firms, political firms, to go and negotiate with the Metro Board.
Right.
But those people who were paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to get us the free Metro passes didn't show up to meetings and still got paid when, wow, I had told them we could have used those hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy the Metro passes for,
right,
the students,
right,
instead of paying lobbying firms who are their friends,
yeah,
to go and do the work for students. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps pay students to go to the board of Metro and demand free Metro passes.
Right.
But anyway, at that meeting where I was set, where I exposed that, the chancellor got the student veteran to come and basically try to embarrass me. Mm-hmm. And that as a result of that, I didn't get embarrassed. I still didn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. The chancellor organized other students to come and protest me.
Right.
But the power of students is bigger, I think, than divide and conquer, because I really felt that student didn't understand where I was coming from,
right,
or why I would not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. So after the student made his comment in my committee meeting that I chaired, I thanked him for his time, and I asked him if he could join me in my office after the meeting,
right,
which he did. Mm-hmm. When he came into my office, I shared a story about where I come from,
right,
who my mentors are, and I meant it. Mm-hmm. I was mentored throughout high school by Lieutenant Nepomuceno, who was a 20-year Navy veteran, and Master Chief Gardner, who spent 30 years of his life in the Navy. Mm-hmm. I want to say, even patriotically, fighting on behalf of all of us, mm-hmm, because these are Filipino immigrants that did it not for any U.S. agenda, but because they truly believed they were doing it for the right reasons.
Right.
And they taught me the values that the Navy instills in you, which is honor, courage, and commitment. Mm-hmm. So I shared with him who were my mentors, and I told him, I forgot the student veteran's name. It was like 2 years ago, but
right,
I told him when the district provides housing, basic needs, and services to the homeless veteran students who come talk to me almost every meeting about the lack of services, I will stand for that Pledge of Allegiance, because that means that we're actually creating justice for all.
Right.
Right. I refuse to talk about justice for all when we have people who fought for this country sleeping outside of Los Angeles Trade Tech College.
Right.
You know, sleeping in Skid Row. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I actually encouraged you to join me in standing up to the Board of Trustees.
Right.
because they're using us, they're using you, they're using me to fight about symbolic things when the actual change lies in the Board of Trustees. And they are not doing anything to support you, to support veterans, or any of our students.
Right.
So after that meeting, the student veteran and I decided to work together and do some more research to make sure we do advocacy on behalf of student veterans. So that prepared me, I say. All of that, like having had experiences with divide and conquer, people in power, you know, and even just the politics outside of that, I think prepares me for this post.
Right.
And already I can see the divide and conquer.
Right.
And who administration is choosing to work with and who they're not. Mm-hmm. Because that's also another tool.
Right.
That they use to divide and conquer. They'll choose certain students who agree with them to work with, and then they'll isolate other students. But
right.
You know, I think we have pretty good solutions to all of that.
Sounds like you're more than ready, more than experienced. You've seen it all, almost. As an institution that, you know, champions inclusivity and social justice, I'd also want to ask, how has your experience been as a Brown student on campus?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I actually feel that my experiences are, you know, it's interesting because there's always the experiences that the institution wants to put out. They
right.
put indigenous faces, they put black faces, they mm-hmm. put brown faces on this pamphlets for recruitment.
Right.
But it's only for that. Mm-hmm. Because once we get in here, you have racist professors. The first one I encountered in the legal studies department. And at that time, she was teaching a legal studies course, and I couldn't fathom the erasure of indigenous people
right.
in her course. And then at that time, I also had an accommodation that was stemming out of the I want to say, violent curriculum she was putting. When she disregarded the accommodation and disregarded the TA that was, like, advocating for my accommodation.
Right.
So right away from the first time I got into a class, I saw the entitlement white professors have mm-hmm. in the institution because they're protected, right? A lot of these are tenure track professors who you can't really do anything about
right.
because, you know, there's no accountability.
Right.
To just even the lack of access for students with disabilities, a lot of indigenous students, a lot of African-American students, a lot of brown students come to the institution with disabilities because of the traumas that we faced or right. just disabilities that we're born with. And this campus is not equipped to provide services for any of the services that students with special needs have. The events on campus, a lot of them, I think, are pretty, I want to say, tone deaf. You know, you have indigenous students who don't feel comfortable going into the American Indian Resource Center mm-hmm. because it's been co-opted. It's been taken over
right.
by people who want to acknowledge indigenous land and take over indigenous spaces
mm-hmm.
but don't respect indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They disconnect the land from the people. They'll acknowledge certain tribes who have, for a lot of them, have long since disappeared or whose members remain at low numbers.
Right.
When you have a plethora of indigenous students who are of Mexican, who are of Guatemalan, who are of Central American descent, whose ancestors have been traveling to this land for centuries,
right.
who are treated as immigrants and others,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think a lot of it is done strategically, because
right.
if you do acknowledge all the indigenous students on campus as who they are, then you'd have to provide them all the resources.
Hmm.
But right now, they're choosing to only acknowledge certain groups because those groups don't have any political power or the numbers.
Right.
So yeah, that's been my experience. I see through the performance that UCSC likes to put out there for funding or recruitment.
Right.
But yeah, I think one thing that I want to make clear is that this institution is, I want to say, a continuation of the University of California. This institution was founded on genocide. One of our first law schools was UC Hastings. The man who's named after Hastings gave millions of dollars back in the day to literally exterminate Native Americans.
Wow.
Which is what the institution is doing now through the erasure. It's not doing it through armed forces anymore because right. it's not popular, but they're doing it by erasing the indigenous Mexican identity, the indigenous Guatemalan identity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, erasure is real. And I think that, you know, it's time for not only acknowledging whose land we stand for,
right.
stand on, but returning that land. So I'm excited for that too.
Thank you for your honesty. Appreciate that. What are your thoughts on the recent protests against the chancellor during the John Lewis celebration? You know?
Yeah. Thank you so much for that question. You know, I think it was a program. And I think that protest was under the program for a call to action,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting
right.
because usually protests are not part of programs.
Right.
You know, they're not scheduled to be part of a program that it's planned or prepared.
Right.
So to me, that was interesting to see that a protest was part of a program to open up for John Lewis
mm-hmm.
and. I say it's interesting because I've met John Lewis.
Wow.
I've talked with John Lewis.
Wow.
I've actually been mentored by the people who John Lewis worked with back when he was my age.
Wow.
Right? I joined the Freedom Schools back when I was 18 through mm-hmm. the Children's Defense Fund, who is founded by Miss Mary Wright Edelman. Miss mm-hmm. Edelman was the first black woman in Mississippi to be admitted into the bar.
Wow.
In that time, in the 60s, 70s, she was using her law degree to advise MLK and to advise all the student organizers and the people who were on the ground about nonviolent civil actions. And just a few years ago, before the pandemic, I got to meet Representative Lewis and got to hear the stories of the nonviolent civil rights era. And I'm grateful for that experience because through that lens is how I was able to take this recent protest, which I think was impactful in that it allowed a wider audience to see what happened, what is going on at UCSC. It not only informed students who are already going through the experiences of like meal plan reductions and housing increases, you know, and it's good awareness because a lot of students don't know about that. But it's also good awareness to the community. One thing that John Lewis taught me is that we need to unite everyone. He was part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which in that summer organized mostly white students to come to the South and create freedom schools with the leadership of black people
right.
to make sure that while voter registration efforts are going on, white terrorism is going on, children are kept safe. You know, in porches and backyards, you know, during that time, there was like white students that got murdered, black people that got murdered because of wanting to just register people to vote. So I do think that the in that spirit that the protest was impactful, that it brought awareness. I just feel that in the eyes of administration, it could be seen as a performance because they're not giving the students who spoke any actual power, right? I wish that the students who spoke were recruited into some type of committee or body that actually gives them decision-making power into where university funds are going.
Right.
If I recall, part of what the students were advocating for were the UCSC BSU demands,
right?
You know, which is, I think, you know, simple things like creating more mental health resources for black students it's basically simple things as divesting from a system of policing that right now focuses on the aftermath of violence, but not really preventing violence.
Right.
You know, they're talking about providing 3 full-time queer and trans-friendly psychologists. They're talking about designation of ABC themed housing for ABC students without guaranteed housing. We have students right now. I live in House 7, which is the Rosa Parks African American themed housing. We have students who are Black and could not get into Black housing or Black themed housing when those spaces were created for them. So addressing those issues, specifically the BSU-led demands, I think were the most important things that came out of that protest, the awareness. I think the students who spoke, Ray and Sharu, were amazing in expressing their demands. I saw the students who were in front of them showing solidarity.
Right.
I think their actions were I want to say bold, because they were right in front of administration.
Right, it was.
You know, and in front of the UC president. So I think those actions were bold. I just feel that administration does not take our demands serious, because already the space was created as a performance for administration using students, because I haven't learned of any actual power the administration granted to those students who courageously spoke, who dedicated their time. So unless the administration actually gives them any power or adheres to the demands, the administration has used them essentially as a performance for the audience they brought to the for the inauguration of the college.
Right.
But yeah, I was, my friends were there. Unfortunately, I think at that time I wasn't feeling too well. I think that was when I first started getting COVID.
Right.
But yeah, it was an amazing experience to see it on Instagram and seeing all the students united from different organizations. But yeah, I think that hopefully the students who led that protest are respected, and they're actually given decision-making power, and the demands that will benefit all students are actually done, or else it's going to bring, I want to say, shame to administration that they only did that for a performance and not to actually give students any power.
Right, right. All right, Fredo, thank you very much for all these stories, experiences, ideas. I'm glad you came in for this interview. One last thing, do you have any messages you want to portray to the folks? Any ways to reach you if people have, you know, problems or solutions, ideas they could reach you at?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for that question, Angelo, and thank you so much for your time, and thank you, everyone, for listening to me today. I know sometimes I can go on many stories, but the main thing I want to leave people today is that before the pandemic, a lot of us could not picture a world outside of exploitation, outside of homelessness. A lot of us were exhausted. Then we saw a world where the pandemic changed everyone. You know, we pressured the government to listen to the plight of oppressed peoples across the country. 2020, summer of 2020, I think a lot of us experienced what the power of people can do, where people took out into the streets after decades, centuries of violence. And I think now that we're coming out of the pandemic, it is an opportunity to seize a moment so we don't go back to normal. We saw that the world can change in the span of months. Why can't we do it? Not because of a disease, because of little organisms that are coming into our bodies. Why can't we be the organisms, the people, to be that good force? Instead of it being COVID, we should be a new force that is not a disease, but it's more of like a cure, you know, not only for this institution, but for the state. And we know that California is a sunshine state. We know whatever we do, the country follows. In the University of California, we have the platform. You know, we are, quote unquote, the top 10% of students in California. At UCSC, we are, I want to say, not only the top 10%, but the most creative, the most resilient, and the cutest, to be honest, because we have amazing people on campus. So we have the charisma, we have the intelligence, and we have the passion. And we can put all that passion into a collective organization, which is why I'm asking people, if you want to create change, if you want to join a group of people, there is a party now, the politically active, reignited, transformative youngs that is bringing not only students, but street youth, workers, Labor Day workers, academics, faculty in union and in solidarity to bring this change that is time sensitive and is effective. Everyone is welcome. If you do want to join and stay in contact, hit me up on Instagram. The link is on my bio for the party contact info. If you go to @UCSC.Fredo on Instagram, you'll find us there, and we'll stay connected. Thank you all so much. I appreciate and love everyone who is tuning in, and especially you, Angelo. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your time. That was the wise and honest words of Alfredo Gama Salmeron, president-elect. Thank you for tuning in. Till next time.